Welcome to another episode of Rolling Imperfection, the podcast for players and game masters to design perfect characters through imperfection. We cover all forms of game design, from interesting and engaging backstory creation to campaign and NPC development. Enjoy, remember to play what you love, and may your characters do something epic. Welcome back to Rolling Imperfection, the podcast with players and GMs for story-driven campaigns. I'm Steve.
And I'm Kevin.
And today we're going to give everyone tentacles. Look at your chairs. Tentacles for everyone. That did not go out the way I intended. This is not episode 69.
True. I mean, you're not wrong.
Yeah, yes. I mean, you have an extra appendage. Why wouldn't you want the extra appendage, right? Just embrace it.
Yeah, that's how that works. I mean, I promised last time that this would be the first of our punk trilogy. And so, we're doing biopunk today.
Yeah, we're feeling pretty lucky. That's pretty
cool. Yeah, yeah. Steve and I got together over the weekend, and we watched an assortment of films. But yeah. One of them was technically biopunk.
I would not have thought of it as one. I don't know. In my mind, I was kind of thinking, I'm actually not too familiar with this genre myself. Mm-hmm. But I was more thinking it was like general horror, because I was thinking biopunk would be like cyberpunk and typical, like, you know, neon lights and stuff. But instead of like doing electronics and, you know, like gadgets, and replacing your arm with like a mechanical arm type of thing, and like with like rocket launchers, you're replacing it with like newly modified stuff, and you're like got people that turn into like Hulk type stuff, you know, like weird genetic organic stuff instead. But
that is part of it. And I mean, we watched David Cronenberg's Rabid from I can't remember which year, the 70s.
70s, yeah.
And that doesn't quite have the like overt punk aspects to it. It kind of devolves into a little bit of a zombie movie. But it does have like the corporation and the like pushing the technology, and like, you know, needing to carry it on for the sake of money, that then, you know, specifically transforms a young woman into, bit of a creature. And yeah, I mean, that's kind of the thing. The genre itself wasn't really coalesced until after cyberpunk came about, and then people were like, why not genetic modification? And you know,
so it was more of an afterthought.
Yeah, but like in tracing it back, I mean, I know we usually go back to like Jules Verne, H.G. Wells, but honestly, Frankenstein, the novel I consider the first science fiction novel, and I can defend that claim. it's kind of a biopunk story. It's literally using organs to assemble a more perfect human being, and like, you know, primitive, but you could kind of see it as it's a little bit biopunk.
Also, I don't know if it's still available for free, but I was actually looking for something in Audible, and I found that. I was like, oh, I should probably get that with one of my credits, and it was free on Audible.
Yeah, so Audible actually has a bunch of classics that are
yeah,
that
I think I got 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea for free as well.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good one. But yeah, we are not sponsored by Audible.
Yet. Maybe you should work on that.
Yeah. Carrying it to kind of the H.G. Wells era, The Island of Dr. Moreau is also like a proto biopunk, where crazy guy on island wants to like combine people and animals and kind of turn one into the other and vice versa.
So he wants to relive cats.
Yeah, kind of.
Oh, huh.
I actually prefer the Island of Lost Souls version, which is like a 1932 adaptation over the novel, with the great Charles Laughton. You got some Bela Lugosi in there as like a crazy animal person. It's good stuff. It's nice and short. It's like 80 minutes, I think. Yeah. But it really all comes together after Cyberpunk, kind of in like the late 80s to like early 90s. And kind of one of the big things when I was doing a little bit of research is the author Paul DeFilippo wrote a series of short stories called Ribofunk. And if you want to look up, he has, there's a reason he called it that. And I think it's pretentious, but especially
I was
going to
say, I was thinking like ribosomes or whatever, but
yeah, it's ribosomes and funk. Cause he thought punk music was like dead or something. I don't know. It's very mid nineties. It's a very mid nineties take. Yeah, it does have like interesting stories. You mentioned like a guy becoming superhuman. That's kind of like the first story. Adapts. Yeah, he adapts like slang and does like some world building. And look, I read that collection of short stories. I watched a bunch of David Cronenberg. And I read The Wind Up Girl in preparation for this episode. And if there's one thing I've learned, is that biopunk authors love their world building way, way, way too much. Like, they will sacrifice story, they will sacrifice characters, and they need their world building. Like,
do you mean to like kind of like outline how these people with these superpowers essentially exist, or why there's a need for the genetic modification? Like, in what way?
Like, yeah, kind of like in creating this whole world and kind of like, oh, well, look how like genetic engineering has like changed the world. They spend like a lot of time on the world when I think it could be illustrated with like, you know, simple characters more.
I think it might just be
I'm a very character focused like reader. That's what I like. So, you know, I didn't think Ribofunk was bad. I was really disappointed by The Wind Up Girl, but I won't go there. Ribofunk's like, they're like a bunch of nice little vignettes of varying quality, and they have some really cool ideas. I think he cared more about just being like, look, like freaking hamster people. Yeah.
I was going to say that, like, I feel like Cyberpunk is more like easily digestible. Like when you look at like a Cyberpunk city image, you're like, oh, I understand, you know, like, you know, absorbing all these different types of like awesome media and, you know, like augmenting yourself with like mechanical stuff so you can, I don't know, shoot lasers and shit, or have like super long range binoculars in your eyes type of stuff, like makes sense. But like when we do like genetic engineering, like today, it's very like subtle. You don't really think about it too much. You don't see it too much. So I feel like it's a little bit harder to just like explain, I guess, without world building, maybe.
I don't know that that's necessarily true.
Well, and how would you...
like today, but
how would you like display that in a biopunk setting then? Like, how would you just like put like animal people? I mean, like, we've talked about Ravnica and how like Simic is basically a type of biopunk, I guess.
I have it
as
on
a
here.
Guild.
Dimir too.
Dimir.
We'll talk about it later.
Okay.
But yeah, honestly, as far as implementing it in a game, you'd probably have to spend a little bit of time figuring out the rules. Like my Cyberpunk game, and Cyberpunk and Biopunk are really easy to mix. I'm just gonna put that up front.
They could totally be like separate organizations or mega corporations or whatever. Versus each other, so yeah, easily.
Yeah, I didn't have it as well thought out as I wanted, which sucks because I had two characters who really, really were into it, including Steve's character. But I think coming back to it, I would try to have more of like a like timetable consequences type thing, like more ironed out, like maybe. Maybe a little bit looser than like a ton of tables, but definitely like a few tables as to like, you know, oh, if you do this, it'll adjust your odds, stuff like that. I think definitely needs to be a part, because it's essentially a world where your characters can just buy physical upgrades, like outside of the leveling system. You might even want to get rid of the leveling system entirely and just make it about like buying upgrades. So, yeah, I do think it requires a little bit more thought, but yeah, essentially you're just thinking about how can I do stuff without technology? Like, are you breeding, like, one of the stories in Ribofunk has, you go outside and this like little cluster of like light bugs is designed to like follow you, like a street light, as so not to waste as much power. And they just follow you to the edge of their little sector. And if the next sector has it, you pick up a different set of like fireflies and stuff. So, yeah, it's thinking like that and thinking how much of your world you want affected by it. And I mean, that book also goes like a little crazy with it because it's like, we just use Biopunk to do everything pretty much. And I'm like, I don't know that we'd use Biopunk to do everything, you know, or biotech, sorry. So I think it takes a little bit of like a deft hand as to like what aspects do you want to do? How advanced is it? Is it like, you know, you need to go to a doctor? Can you do it on the fly? How much prep does it take? How much study does it take? Like, do you have to go? Do you have to sequence the genomes of the person or thing or whatever you're trying to splice? And then like sequence some other genome and be like, okay, I have this much time to like work on it. How technical is it? And you want to try to facilitate that into like a not as boring as it just made it sound way, you know?
I was going to say that kind of made me think of, I don't know what they call that system, but it's in a lot of more recent Final Fantasy games where they have like those trees that you go through for like unlocking abilities and stuff. I could totally see someone that wanted to have a very, you know, like customize your character as you will campaign that wanted to make their own rules go that far and have all these like weird genetic things that evolve into each other and like mutate and shit.
I will say doing my my little bit of reading for this episode made me want to work on my my own system again.
But
doing the research for this episode also meant I didn't have time for it. So hopefully that feeling will continue. But yeah, I do think it's a cool genre. But I did want to focus a little bit, especially with like the first part of like the punk thing, because we didn't really talk about it much when we did steampunk.
True.
But there is like a punk aspect that kind of goes throughout these. And I know we mentioned it in our steampunk. We just didn't like delineate it. So generally, punk involves quote unquote hacking or being able to hack, which is, you know, you want to have independence able to interact with the technology. You know, it came about in the 80s when like people were making computers in their garages and it was still like very accessible. And, you know, it's lessened, unfortunately. But I think that spirit's there. So for biopunk, it'd be biohacking, essentially. You get a hold of someone's genome and then you can mess with it. And then unless they've taken precautions, you can affect someone or something.
Or hack yourself and modify yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Then, of course, there is the mega corporations, which in the steampunk episode would have technically been like colonial organizations and a little bit of like the East India Company. But here it's more like big pharma or like agri-crops, you know, where you're doing big agriculture, you're doing the designer pill scene, all that stuff is like rife for biopunk. Yeah, you could start to see where you could get some more modern feeling, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So, yeah, and then of course, you know, there's always government abuse, like secret military, super soldiers, torture, you know, the fun stuff. And, you know, that's where you get into stuff like the anime and manga of Akira, which is, you know,
the thing.
Like, yeah, it's definitely got some cyberpunk stylings, but I think like the core of it actually is biopunk.
I would I would agree. I mean, the logo is literally a pill.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, I recommend the manga, by the way. It's definitely like if you want to scratch that like cyberpunk biopunk itch, it's a good one. It's a good way to do it.
I haven't read the manga, but I also recommend the manga. I didn't really care for the movie, but with what everyone says, I can't help but believe that the manga must be amazing.
The manga is, so the movie is volume one of the manga, and then like the last chapter of the manga, like stitched together.
Oh,
like,
that would be one, why it didn't make any sense.
Yeah, volume one and volume six. We're just going to smush. Two through five? What? We don't need those. That, Steve, that's just a distraction.
I guess maybe if you're just going to drink and you really want to like watch something right before you do your cyberpunk biopunk game, I guess maybe it'd be fine. But I wouldn't follow along too much on the movie then.
I mean, the animation's incredible.
Oh, the animation's amazing. Yeah, the animation's like fantastic. But yeah.
Yeah. So those are kind of the big like punk aspects, and kind of any punk game should have probably two of the three, at least, I would say, if not all three. I think, and you know, you can always just have like a like bio aspects, I guess, but you know, what's a game without a little government overreach and corporations attempting to take control of everything?
I was going to say, I guess it kind of fits in the biohacking section you have there out of the three, but wouldn't like gangs and like small group organizations also be like a major part in the punk genre as well? Cause like that's like a major part of like cyberpunk as well, as you have like a lot of different like gang territories. And sometimes they're not even like you'd normally think of like a street gang. Like sometimes they're just like a group of people who like think of each other as family and kind of do their own thing, even if it may be, you know, something illegal.
I mean, yeah, I would agree. The general rebellion aspect of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that is what I was trying to get with the hacking instance. So.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. We talked about this a little bit already, but you do definitely want to do the will it blend here. And I'm not talking genre blending yet, though I do have a genre blending section for this.
You're talking about putting phones into blenders?
That we'll get to cyberpunk in the future.
Oh, okay. Okay.
We're talking genetic blending, a big part of biopunk, and you know, so it's not just enhancement. It's not just like me want strong arm.
Sometimes it is.
Sometimes it is, but not always. And I do think it goes I have animal people first and foremost on the list because, you know, but, you know, think deeper. Maybe you want to fuse with like a tree or like a vine or something.
Done it.
True. You have. Or fungus. I think Trong brought us a game with like fungus people that I thought was pretty interesting.
Was that, was it Tenra Bancho Zero?
No, that was a different one. Oh, Tenra Bancho had the living dolls, of which I played one.
Okay. I know it had some weird shit. It was like, that might have been it. It was probably something that Nick presented to the table then. It'd be one of the two for sure. Either Nick or Trong.
Yeah. You can always think, you know, outer space. You can go to Aliens. I think that is always fun. The novel and set of short stories, Schizomatrix, deals a little bit with that.
Hmm. Like aliens like crash land and people are just like, oh wow, these things are super advanced, let's genetically modify them into ourselves.
No, the aliens themselves have like biohacking stuff and bioevolution stuff that they do. It's more space opera-y, actually.
Oh, huh.
Yeah. I mean, in my own cyberpunk, which definitely has biopunk elements, as I mentioned, I took some of the ideas from A Door into Ocean, where they have a race of aquatic dwelling people who use natural species to kind of reshape, you know, and give people like water breathing and stuff like that. So, you know, aliens gonna be aliens. Make them as weird as you can. Make them dancing coral if you want.
Oh yeah, there you go.
Yeah, which is an alien race that I came up with because I thought it would be funny. And they are, goddamn it. Then of course you also have the non-alive blending. You know, you got your steel skin and you got your you gotta have your Colossus, right? X-Men definitely have a little biopunk in their history.
It actually makes me think, this also be, it's general horror. I regard it as general horror, but now that I think about it, it might be, The Thing. Would that be,
it definitely like has
horror or
it definitely has some aspects of the body horror type of this.
Yeah.
The problem is like,
it's isolated and stuff. And
I don't know that it's like really genetic manipulation, you know?
Yeah, they don't really go into like its origin or whatnot. So yeah,
Yeah, definitely fringe. But I definitely say honorary member, if not actual member.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of one of the like first things you want to think about is like, what's going on, what can be enhanced, how is it enhanced. These kind of like procedural things are unfortunately going to be the responsibility of the GM, and then naturally you'll have your players coming to you with unreasonable demands, right, Steve?
No, they have reasonable demands. We have reasonable demands.
Uh-huh.
They are. I just want to be immortal. I want to, like meld with a giant race of sentient metal. What do you call those things from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? Little muncher droids.
The mousers.
The mousers. Yeah. But giant versions of them. And then, eventually become a universe. Yeah, that's reasonable.
Yeah, yeah. You just want to become
I said
one
universe.
With everything.
Yes, I did. I did. Yeah, I wanted to become a universe.
Yeah. Reasonable demands.
Reasonable demands.
So, yeah. Be ready for that. This definitely exposes your game to a little bit of potential min-maxing, unfortunately.
Yeah.
It's going to require some like thought, and don't be afraid to be like, no.
I feel like you could totally, I was going to make this comment earlier when you were talking about how people would just maybe just buy their upgrades instead of getting experience. It's because that one does make a lot of sense. And two, I find it kind of funny is that's, I believe how you leveled up in original D&D was you basically got money and you bought your spells and your levels and all that stuff with like with gold, which is why a lot of stuff revolves around monetary value even now in D&D. But I could totally see where you have people like buying these things, these different like augmented abilities, but there's like a certain like cap to like what they can have, but they can always switch them in and out as they want as your balancing factor. And, or you could have them so that they, this organic material and more like, cyberpunk, like your stuff is going to like wear down and like rust and stuff like that, get damaged. You may have to like upkeep them in some way, either through like some sort of like physical thing that you have to do, genetically, like modifying yourself to make sure it doesn't like mutate into something completely random. Then you get a nice little table that you could roll on as a GM, upkeep.
I would go a little bit differently. Essentially to do the simplest like hacks, you're probably like creating a program today. You're probably going to be using the skeleton of something that someone else did. Right. So the more basic the hack, the more it would open you up to like outside potential meddling with you.
Oh.
And then, yeah. So then while your players want to get like the good stuff, like they want to steal from the mega corporations and get them like good boosts, them good, them good, secure, like, splices. That also means that corporation would potentially have like an inroad to the thing you just put into your body, right?
True.
So that's a little bit more how I would play with it, and kind of how I want to play with it when I get back to my own little slice of biopunk.
That's actually a really good point. Is that I didn't really think about that, but in terms of like programming, and I guess you could use this in cyberpunk as well, but I feel like it's way more dangerous in biopunk. is that like for programming, it's actually kind of a like a joke that like real programming isn't just like I'm gonna type everything from start to scratch or from scratch to like completion. It's more of a joke, like, just like what? How do I do this? I'm just gonna go on the internet and look it up. Oh, there's some code. Copy paste. A lot of people do that. That's actually a successful way to do it. Then you're just taking random stuff and you hope that it works.
Steve, are you telling me the movie Swordfish lied to me? Are you telling me that Hugh Jackman can't like hack into a place?
I mean, you can do that. I mean, like I've had to do that in my programming classes before. Like you have to like start something and like do the complete code for it. So it is possible to do that. But when you're actually like doing it for a job, you know, or, you know, if you're doing it for a hobby in this case, where a lot of people are probably gonna be doing it just to, you know, modify themselves or other people, I could totally see it being a big deal of, you know, like, oh, I'm just going to take this this bit of genetically modified code that I have here that should be fine. And little do you know, it's a megacorp plant to get people addicted to their product or whatever. And now it's, you know, fucking people up and causing problems. I mean, that's a whole plot in and of itself.
Yeah. Ooh, we're going to talk more about that next time, too. I can't wait. You just reminded me of something that I have to remember for next time.
Write it down.
Okay. Yeah. So with it, you also want to think about like the administration method. Like if you're doing gene modification, were they born that way? Like, boom, here you're, you know, we've already modified your genes at birth. Or are they going to get it later? You know, it's going to be like a pill or like an injection or a gas. Or are each of these methods, you know, the simpler or more weaponized, the more difficult it is to make or to make it effective. And you might also want to think about having like resistance, you know, that your players can make or buy that is affected by what they're doing. Right.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. As I was saying, this type of setting, I feel like we were going to get to that, but like you could totally just have someone that's like, I'm going to be a biohacker that develops these like tranquilizer darts that like genetically modify people in a way that like defeats them one way or the other, or like turns them into something that's like loyal to me type of thing. Like it'd be kind of crazy to like shoot someone with a dart and have them turn into like some monstrosity. And then they take your orders. You can use, you know, your enemies against you or against their friends.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not like anyone we know would do that at all. You know,
I'm talking about M. Oh, okay. Okay. I was
I
like,
think GMX would do it
is there
too,
someone but... else that is doing that I need to be aware of?
I mean, Trong is taking notes right now, probably, but
yeah, he's like living zombies or living skeletons. Hmm. I could be a lich that modifies the living.
Yeah. You can do all kinds
of
stuff.
That's actually
kind of
terrifying,
man.
A bio lich. It's just like a living person that's basically made themselves into a near immortal god.
I mean, season 4 of Stranger Things, but.
Uh-oh, I haven't started that yet. Uh-oh.
Yeah. Decent, you know, light biopunk there. But, yeah. This also leads to, you know, if you're administering it, is it just like, you know, okay, you get this chemical, the chemical changes your genes, or did you make it viral? Which, of course, means it could mutate and it could, you know, spread.
Oh, boy.
Don't worry about it, Steve. It's no problem, right? You made an airborne virus. Those will not at all shut down the world for like 2 years, right?
Yeah.
I mean, is another thing. Reading older biopunk, like post-pandemic, I was like, simpler times.
I mean, you could even have, it's not mine. I guess I shouldn't say just go ahead and take inspiration from it. It was totally yours, so it's up to you. But you did have the, what do you call it? Like the, in your space game, you had the virus race. Necrolaws? Is that what it was?
Yes. That was the virus that inhabited and reanimated dead bodies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you could have totally have something like that where that's like a type of sentience now.
Yeah, it's good times.
It's what I wanted to be if I didn't get to play this character anymore, and I might still be. I haven't decided yet. We'll see.
True. Future updates.
Future updates.
So yeah, there's a lot to do with it. And I think we shouldn't neglect the, shall we say, less personal aspect of biopunk. And that is symbiosis or living equipment, something Cronenberg is freaking famous for. I just watched his new movie, Crimes of the Future, which might tell people when this was recorded. But it has like bio beds and stuff like that. And like a biotech autopsy table is like a big thing in it. And it's a very frustrating movie in a lot of ways. But it did have some really like cool ideas. But I think the symbiosis aspect, you know, you could go straight to like biosuit with like Guyver, where you basically have, you know, your living hard suit, your living mecha, you know, that never goes wrong.
Fleshy.
Yeah. To, you know, your little bio pets, you know, you got your juiced out, critter. That goes from like, oh, it's an adorable, oh my God.
You're familiar on steroids.
Exactly. To, you know, go out, living sword. Sure. Why not? Yeah. Gooey. It doesn't have to be gooey.
Okay. Yeah. I was like, that's kind of weird. I can't really picture that being a good sword anyway.
Depends on the sword.
I guess so. Teach their own.
Bioengineered to only let you use it. Anyone else tries to use it? Oh, look, fatal virus.
Oh, God, that is horrifying.
That's biopunk.
Yeah, I guess so.
Honestly, the world.
Oh, God, I could see that actually. Like a gun that is like, it's an organic gun and it looks like it's made of metal, but like when you grasp onto it, it like connects into your like veins and shit, and if it doesn't register, you know, the actual owner, it infects and kills you, and that's just like a normality in in the setting. Like, that's actually kind of scary,
honestly. In a lot of biopunk settings, I'm like, so let me get this straight, everything's alive and everything will fucking murder your ass. Cool. Yeah. So
oh boy. Yeah, public transportation.
Yep, yep.
I'm living buses and trains. Ugh.
Warning, what I'm about to say is really messed up. Look, one of the stories in Ribofunk has a child literally get crushed to death by its own blanket. So
what the fuck?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the start of the story. Yeah, as we go into the fears section.
Yep. That segued really well. I was not intending that, but
look, if we know one thing about punk genres, it's that they're light and fluffy and very carefree, right, Steve?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like nothing could go horribly wrong or be very depressing or hyper-realistic. Well, hyper-realistic in the terms of like, you know, like, oh, you get shot and then you're just fucking dead now.
Yeah.
Sometimes, yeah. Yeah. So I'm going through the different stuff that are on this list. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah. So naturally, we mentioned the viruses, which can lead to death, deformation, loss of self, insanity, good times. There are also, of course, invasive bioengineered species. I think they're rot weevil in the Windup Girl. Or, you know, just like dinosaurs running around killing shit like in Jurassic Park.
Cool.
Which can lead from everything to, you know, oh dang, we lost some stuff, we no longer have coffee or something like that, to of course just, oh, mass starvation, good times. Then of course you have the body horror. You know, you can find yourself with a physical deformation like a you know, an armpit fang, always fun.
Yummy.
To yeah, delicious. Causes you to have cravings for human human blood. Gotta get warm. To you know, slowly kind of losing like control, like either losing your will or losing your sanity. You know, body experiences are terrifying, and this kind of reflects that. You know, you start believing you're someone or something else to just lose your humanity. You become like an animal, or obedient, or you start thinking of yourself as a god, and you know, you go a little crazy. Could lead to different stratification, where if you're not enhanced, you're worthless, like in the movie Gattaca, which naturally leads into possibly having an engineered slave race. And by possibly, I mean a lot of the biopunk has an engineered slave race, whether it be adorable little hamster people that get abused. Yes, that is a specific reference to a story in Ribofunk.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it has multiple animal people that are like, yeah, it's bad. And then, of course, the hack version of slavery, whether it's just they're made as slaves or they're turned into slaves, they might have to deal with like a distinctive mark. Or in the case of the wind-up girl, she literally is designed to like have characteristic movements, like she moves like she's doing the robot all the time, so that she can be identified. And you know, fighting off like bred obedience, you know, oh no, now you have to make like a willpower roll in order to not obey a command.
Yeah, that's yikes. Awful.
Yeah,
I was gonna say this. Seems like this is stemmed from like how we kind of like view robots in general. Yes. Is that like robots, you, like, oh yeah, they're basically slaves. They, you know, do what we want and they're not sentient. Though, I mean, in a good cyberpunk setting, you're gonna blur the line on that. Make some creativity usually.
Yeah, there's the whole uncomfortable thing with droids in Star Wars right now.
Oh, so. Yeah. Wait, oh, that's a thing right now? I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
I thought it's always been a thing, but...
No, that's more recent. Yeah, but yeah, we'll do a whole episode on robots eventually. I promise. Look, I've read enough Asimov that, but yeah, it does kind of stem from that.
Okay, yeah.
There's also, of course, Gene Warfare. One of the stories in Ribofunk has basically, it's designed as like epistolary, so it's all letters from a soldier as they go through the different mutations of this virus that they got seeded with on the front lines. It's pretty terrifying. You get shit like, oh, we lost the ability to experience music, or we lost the ability to use nouns, like
that was honestly, seem like weird, like those like side effects of it, or is that like the intention of it?
It's not clear.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But it gets really dark. It gets way darker than that.
Oh, okay. I say kind of fits in with your next one on cloning is like in Stellaris, that's actually like one of the things that you can do is get gene warriors and clone warriors, and you basically like modify your soldiers in like messed up ways. So there's like hyper efficient, and I guess the drawback would be, like you were saying, like not being able to perceive music or use certain words, is that you're like, I guess the thought would be you're taking out anything that they might be like thinking about or get distracted with, and like be able to like devote their thought process to whatever it is their war goal is that they're doing, their profession.
Yeah.
So
you also get replacements, which I think would have been a
build
cool...
more of them.
Yeah. Or, you know, oh no, we really want to replace this person with a who's in this position with someone who will agree with us. Let's make a convenient clone and swap it out.
God.
You know, Manchurian candidate style. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, there are a few things that you can do with biopunk.
Wait, does that mean, what was that plane anime that we all hated?
Can't
remember the names. I hated it so much. Skycrawlers.
Yes.
Was that secretly a biopunk? I mean, it's got the governmental organization.
Sort of.
It's got the clones.
Sort of. Don't watch Skycrawlers.
No, do not watch. It is not a recommendation. Please don't. It's not good.
Nope. But yeah. Yeah. Did you have anything else you wanted to say before we go into the genre blending section? Back after a decent hiatus.
Yeah. Let's see. I mean, I don't know. I feel like this genre is a little bit more flexible.
I agree.
Than cyberpunk, maybe, just because you could have a biopunk that's more nature oriented, I guess, but you could also still have it very grounded in civilization at the same time.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, my argument is that it goes right along cyberpunk as like its own branch. So then you have, like, in my sci-fi world where I was like, well, you'd have both. If you have enough diversity of either, you know, maybe you have only humans, but they're spread out across the galaxy, or even humans and enough diverse alien species, you're probably going to have some people develop tech and some people develop, you know, the biotech, cybertech and biotech. True. So, yeah. And then you kind of have the two separate branches kind of splitting up your quote unquote magic systems in a, you know, sci-fi way. And you might even have magic as like a third thing, or like psi abilities. So the interactions there are, I think, kind of interesting. And it's kind of like a logical extension of just kind of the cyberpunk thing in general, you know? I mean, it literally sprang from it, so.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Then, of course, there's also space opera. Gotta love the space opera. One of my... I don't actually think the novel there that's based around them is quite good, but they do come back later on. It's a novel called Falling Free by Lois McMaster Bujold.
Free Fallen! Sorry.
It's part of her Vorkosigan saga, but it's people who are genetically designed with the regular set of hands, and then instead of legs, they have a second set of hands because they're designed to live in zero G. So,
okay, so they're like put back to like monkeys, kind of in a way. They have like more of like being able to like grip things with their feet hands.
Yeah, but it's literally like not leg hands. It's literally copypasta arms into your leg sockets.
Weird.
Yeah. It's an interesting idea. They're modified in other ways, but they're designed to live in like free fall, you know. And eventually they develop like space colonies and stuff. So, yeah.
What do they do if they need to go down to a planet?
They are screwed. That happens in the novel Falling Free.
Okay, I was going to say they have to, right?
Not always. They tend to just chill in space.
Oh, okay.
You mostly don't see them.
Well, I meant from a story standpoint, they have to go.
Nope. For a character? Yeah. You'd need like some sort of electronical conveyance or like get carried around by the big person in your party.
That or crawl on the ground like an animal.
Yeah. Yeah. The novel has like two of them experiencing gravity for the first time and they're like, this is bullshit. What?
This is hell.
Yeah. There's also, of course, crime stories. You could put noir in anything. I argue that cyberpunk is a logical extension of noir, and therefore so is biopunk. The middle stories of Ribofunk are actually like detective stories. It starts with like a classical noir pastiche. Then, of course, as I mentioned earlier, fantasy. You can have your magic messing with biological stuff, like in Magic the Gathering, specifically in Ravnica with the Simic. And Steve questioned me when I said Dimir earlier.
Yeah, I'm wondering what you're referring to with the Dimir.
Horrors, Steve.
Oh, I guess, yeah.
Did the Dimir make these, like, monstrosities? They're not quite, like, super, like, test-tubey and scientific about it, but, yeah. They also mess with your memories in not a biopunky way, but you could describe it as a biopunky way if you wanted to, flavor. I mean,
they do. They do have psychic vampires.
Exactly.
So, I mean...
And what game wouldn't be improved by a psychic vampire?
I am not going to argue that. As sad as that makes me feel as a player, primarily.
Speaking of vampires, you can easily put biopunk into horror. I mean, we've talked about literally the genre of body horror, one of my favorites. But technically comes up with bioengineered vampires and zombies and stuff in the manga / anime / OVA series Hellsing. So, yeah. I do think it requires thought. You don't want to just, like, toss it in. but I do think it can add an interesting dimension if you're up for those kind of stories.
Out of curiosity, if you had to not use your own created setting, for biopunk, what do you think would be the easiest system to pick up and use for this that you've used or looked at or read or heard about? I know it's kind of difficult. So I'm like, I don't know if I would be able to easily just like pick up D&D unless I was doing like literally a Ravnica, Simic, or Dimir campaign. Like, I feel like it would need like its own like system. It'd be hard to adapt to.
Yeah, I'm sure they're out there. I honestly haven't looked into that, mostly because just getting into a new system is really rough sometimes.
True.
It would definitely be easiest with the system where you have the ability to like swap in or swap out a bunch of like attributes or like special abilities. So I'd look for something like that. Something with like a decent point buy system.
Oh, okay. So I was going to say like maybe Cthulhu Tech, although it's not the greatest system, but it's got like the parapsychic. So it's got the psychic ability type stuff and it's got Tagers. They're kind of, I mean, you could kind of have them be more.
The problem with that is it doesn't integrate like those two sides, as we discovered when we played it, don't integrate with each other.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I wasn't saying it was like a fantastic system, but I was like, I feel like that might be like the closest that I can think of.
Well, no, because you just want something with like that's like chunky. That's like not like D&D where everything is within a class and your class like determines like a ton and your race determines a ton and you're just dealing with like, two different blocks. You want something where you granularly like buy and put together like different things. So, yeah. And I'm not just saying that because that's kind of what I put together when I do homebrew, but
true. Yeah. That's why I said you can't use your own.
I know.
I wanted to add some restriction there. I'm like, the obvious choice would be you would use your own. I mean, you've done it.
Yeah. I mean, L5R has more of that type of stuff. Legend of the Five Rings. But yeah,
that could be interesting, a samurai themed biopunk.
Get the kami on it. Oh god, that's
I don't know if I'm prepared for what he has, what he would prepare.
any other thoughts?
No, I think that's it. I just kind of wanted to have like maybe like a recommendation for people, which I think your answer like fulfilled that better than I would have intended.
Just trying to answer me and make me answer tricky questions. He didn't get enough last
no. I just felt it would help people to have like an idea of like what to think about when trying to implement this, because like I said, like a lot of people, what they play is D&D, and unless you're doing a Ravnica with Simic or something like very like you're specifically using Simic as like almost like a society or a setting in and of itself, I'm not sure you could use D&D for it easily without a lot of modification. So I was just trying to think of a way to help people figure out what system to use.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, no, I think that's it.
Yeah. So next time, part two.
Electric Boogaloo?
Of the Punk Trilogy. Perhaps Electric Boogaloo. It's definitely more electric. We're not going full cyberpunk, though. Things are going to get a little smaller. So, yeah.
Honey, I Shrunk the Kids small?
Even smaller than that.
Oh, God.
So be sure to play what you love. And until next time, may your characters do something epic with your, you know, bioengineered Wolverine claw arm stuff. Yeah, that got away from me.
I attack with my left-hand weapon, my right-hand weapon, and I'm going to use my three tentacles to do additional bonus actions to hit him again. Got it.
True. Don't forget to blend those bugs and cephalopods in there. Those are included in animal.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you got to get a beetle shell on your back that transforms into wings so you can fly, too. Like, you know, compound that shit when you can.
Absolutely. And if there's one thing I've learned from David Cronenberg, it's that bugs are gross. Biopunk bugs are super gross.
Thank you for listening. If you have any comments, questions, interjections, queries, notes, formal challenges, or suppositions, please email us at roimperfection@gmail.com. That's roimperfection@gmail.com. Or follow us on Twitter at roimperfection or Instagram search roimperfection. You can also visit our website at roimperfection.com. If you enjoyed our work, leave us a rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts. Have a great week, everybody.